Now, in our second conference, we're beginning on page 424, volume 1, and the chapter, Jesus Returns to the Mountain Where He Fasted and to the Rock of Temptation. Now, remember that Jesus is traveling, and He's giving the apostles a kind of history of His life. Took Him to the place of His birth. And then He's traveling to different places. Judas invites Him to his hometown. Also, He intends to meet all the other the shepherds. And now He's going to introduce them to the mountain where He prepared for His mission, principally for Judas. See, Judas thought was, if you're the Messiah, you don't need any preparation. You're so tied into God that, what do you need? And Jesus says, I've got a body. And so Judas needed to be given very graphic and strong witness. So now Jesus takes the disciples, John, Simon Zealot, and Judas, to an isolated mountain. It's rocky, barren, split by gorges with grottos, meaning big entrances, and also caves and inlets in its side. Around is a very desolate land with a dead, gloomy lake filled with stagnant, dark, dead water. My goodness, the Lord went there. A lake of sadness. As they reach the top, Jesus says, this is the place to which I wanted to bring you. Here, Christ prepared for His mission. And we pick up their conversation on page 425, the middle of the page. And I believe it must be Judas, doesn't indicate who said this. And they say, one of them says, but there's nothing here. And Jesus says, you're quite right, there is nothing. With whom were you? With my soul. And with the Father. Ah, you stayed only for a few hours? Now, it's Judas. Jesus says, no, Judas, not a few hours, many days, and precisely 40. But who served you? Where did you sleep? My servants were the wild asses that came to sleep in their caves, where I also had taken shelter. My maidservants were the eagles that said to me with their harsh cries, it's daylight. And they flew away to attack their prey. My friends were the little hares, we'd call them rabbits, that came up almost to my feet, gnawing at the wild herbs. My food and my drink were the same food and drink of the wild flower, the night dew, and the sunshine, nothing else. And he says, but why? And Jesus says, to prepare well, as you say, for my mission. Here's a maxim. Things well prepared for are successful, Jesus says. You said so yourself. And my thing was not a trifle, a useless thing, which would glorify me, the servant of the Lord. But it was to make men understand what the Lord is, and by means of such understanding, make Him loved in the spirit of truth. Now, Judas doesn't understand why Jesus came here to prepare, thinking that he should have gone to a rabbi or the Essenes. And Jesus says that he, as Son of God, could only receive the power and wisdom needed for His mission from the Father. From the power and wisdom, say, of God Himself, since He Himself is the eternal Word of the Father. He points out that the disciples, in preparing, must keep in mind that they have a friend, the good Lord, and two enemies, namely Satan and the flesh. Now, by flesh, he means the flesh and the world with its riches and feasts, honors, and powers, that are not always obtained honestly or used honestly. And Satan is the master of the flesh and of the world, and he uses it to seduce you to follow his so-called rules. These are the passions, appetites, and emotions that need to be kept in control by the help of God's grace. But Satan often seduces us through them to go beyond what is good and reasonable. So Jesus says that he came to this mountain to prepare his body and soul for his mission. Now, what Jesus says there about Satan manipulating us, in a sense, by playing on our passions, appetites, emotions that need to be kept in control. Through original sin, we have lost that control. That's one of the areas in which we were wounded. Our nature wasn't radically changed, but the control of these appetites, that was lost. See? And for that, we need God's grace, and Jesus mentions that. Take the emotion of anger. Do we always have control of it?
No.
Nope. How about patience? How about sadness? How about joy? There's a type of silliness that is not good. There is a good joy that comes from goodness itself. And how about the appetites? How many of us eat absolutely just what we need? I think we all have to look. I don't know whether Satan tempts us in that area. He says, I don't have to tempt them. No problem there. And not sex necessarily, but how about just pleasure? You know? How about laziness? Don't confuse laziness with what we call relaxation, refreshment. Sometimes people get, you know, a not necessary guilt complex about that. Mothers. Yeah. They bringing up their children, and they're for those children 24 hours of the day. Wrong. There ought to be 1 hour for yourself. Just to be renewed. And whatever you like, stretch your feet out, lounge, and whatever. Whatever's good for you. Whatever it relaxes you. As long as it's good, though. I mean, good recreation, there's not a lot of forms of that. But I believe most of you, if you're mothers anyhow, that you have a guilt complex there. And you, if you took an hour off, you wouldn't enjoy it. You'd say, I don't feel good about it. Right? Am I right?
No.
See?
Not anymore.
No? Not now. Oh, they're all growing up.
Not now.
What now?
Liberation.
But not all the mothers. Not all the mothers. I know some who still feel guilty about that hour. You know?
To become workaholics, which is almost like an...
Yeah. Well, it's the children who make constant demands. You have no regular day. You're for them. Whatever turns up, you're there. You have to be, in a sense. And yet, there can be with a forethought where you can have an hour. Not always. If you have, what, from the age of, well, as soon as they're born, until, what, 3 or 4? Until they go to school. Any hour of the day, they're liable to, you know, press the emergency button.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that can be regulated. You love them for 2 hours, but that's it. Oh, but they love it, too. That's a fulfillment, in a sense. That's true. But sometimes there, that can also be, I think the children are taking advantage of the parents in that respect. They know they're a pushover. Mom won't say no, you know. But there again, you have to think about how far can you go there. See, that's... But if you're going to... If it's a question of loving less or loving more, you want to love more.
Yes.
That's a good criterion. However, That is a very good commonsensical principle. You need time to renew yourself. Absolutely. That's God's will. Even if you had to do what this young mother did, she got the idea. Her mother bought her a crib for the three children. And she's called her mom on the phone. She said, "Mom, I can't thank you enough for that. Every afternoon at 3 o'clock, I climb in so they can't get at me." No, you stay out. This is my domain here. It's my time. My crib time. Well, it's good to see things like that.
Yes.
It's good. So, yes, well, I like that idea. Absolutely. See, now you've caught on. You caught on. And not only for an hour, but for 4 hours. 4 hours. Well, I remember someone used to come here, and I met the husband later, and he said, "Shake hands." He said, "I've been waiting to meet you." He said, "Because of your days, when I come home, my wife is whistling and singing." He said, "That's the kind of wife I want to meet. And you're the guy that's been doing it. Shake hands."
My husband pushed me out today. "Oh, you're always much better when you come back."
No, that's good. It's on recording here. Well, these are compliments that we have to record here so that people will know. Yes. Well, at any rate, so when the Lord's talking here about how Satan does try to influence us through our fallen nature, we call it, the lack of control that we have, that he can work on these appetites and emotions and passions, we call them. And so we need to be aware, too, that we are weak in that respect. And Jesus says, "Without me, you cannot do it." In other words, have perfect control. Well, here's what we are going to pick up on what he's saying. In the dialogue they've had, and Jesus saying that this is how he prepared for his mission, it's Simon Zealot, I think, that is speaking here. And they're talking about the destiny imposed by God. "Tell me now, was that destiny imposed by the only one on everybody, or did each choose it for himself?" And Jesus saying it was chosen by each person. "You are right," Jesus says, "Simon. Was it possible for me to go to those who deny the blessed resurrection and the gift of God to be taught? I came here. I took my soul of the Son of Man, and I gave it its finishing touches, and I thus finished the work of 30 years of humility, hidden life, and preparation in order to be perfect when starting my mission. Now, I ask you to stay with me for a few days in this cave. Our stay will be less depressing because we shall be four friends joining in our efforts against sadness, fears, temptation, and the desires of the flesh. I was by myself. It will be less painful because it is now summer. And up here, the mountain winds lessen the heat. I came here at the end of the Tabeth moon, and the wind blowing down from the snowy tops was harsh. It will be less trying because it will be shorter, and also because we have the necessary food to satisfy our hunger. And in small leather flasks that I asked the shepherds to give you, there's enough water to last for the days of our stay. I must snatch two souls from Satan. It can only be done by penance. I ask you to help me. It will be a training for you. You will learn how to snatch victims from mammon, not so much with words as with sacrifice. Words, the satanic uproar, prevents me from hearing them. Every soul which is a prey of the enemy is enveloped in an eddy, he means a swirl, of infernal voices. Do you want to stay with me? If you do not want to, you may go, and we will meet at Tekoa near the market. So the disciples agree, but Judas is not very enthusiastic. We don't expect that from him. After their stay, though, we see Jesus sitting at the entrance of the cave, and he's speaking to the three disciples, and we pick that up on page 428, the bottom of page 29. He says now, our stay is over. The last time, it lasted 40 days, meaning his own time. And I would repeat that it was still winter up here, and I had no food. A little more difficult than this time, was it not? I know that you have suffered even now. The little food we had and I gave you was nothing, particularly for hungry young people. It was barely sufficient to prevent you from collapsing, and the water even less so. The heat is intense during the day, and you will say that it was not so in winter, but then there was a dry wind blowing from that mountain top, and it parched my lungs. And it rose from the plain loaded with desert dust, and it dried more than this summer heat, which can be assuaged by sucking the juice of those acidulous fruits that are almost ripe. The mountain in winter gave only wind and frost-bitten herbs near bare acacias. I did not give you everything because I kept the last bread and cheese and the last flask of water for our way back. I know what my return journey was like, exhausted as I was in the desert solitude. Let us pick up our things and go. Tonight is even clearer than the night we came here. There's no moon, but light is pouring from the sky. Let us go. Remember this place. Remember how Christ prepared and how the apostles prepared. So then now they descend to the plains, which is barren and depressing, and much like a salt desert. They walk for 6 hours. Eventually, they stop at the hollow rock where Jesus was tempted by Satan. Now, there's a change of what I understood. I thought it all took place in one spot. Notice they walk 6 hours, and now there's a rock where Jesus was tempted. See, these are details that are not given in the Bible. Jesus was tempted by Satan. He now describes in detail his temptation. It's on page 430 and 31. The last paragraph, page 430. If you want to prepare to be a teacher, one must have been a pupil. I, as God, knew everything. My intelligence enabled me to understand also the struggles of man, both by intellectual power and in an intellectual way, that is, without any practical experience. Let's explain that. He knew, for example, even in our time, how a typewriter works. But he didn't have the actual experience of using his fingers on a typewriter. See, that's what we call an intellectual knowledge. But he says here, but then some poor friend of mine, some poor son of mine, could have said to me, you do not know what it is to be a man and have the senses and passions, and it would have been a fair reproach. I came here, or rather on that mountain, to prepare not only for my mission, but also for temptation. See? I was tempted where you are now sitting. By whom? By a mortal being? No. His power would have been too limited. I was tempted by Satan himself. I was exhausted. I had not eaten for 40 days. There's another thought there. Not eaten for 40 days. But while I was engrossed in prayer, everything had been forgotten in the joy of speaking to God. Rather than forgotten, it had been made endurable. I felt it as a discomfort of a material nature confined to matter only. I then came back to the world. I was back in the ways of the world. And I felt the needs of those who are in the world. I was hungry. I was thirsty. I felt the biting cold of the desert night. My body was worn out with lack of rest, of a bed, and with a long journey made in such a state of weariness that I could go no farther. Let's stop here to explain. I would say from what the Lord says here, he was in a kind of ecstasy. See, within himself, he was the Son of the Father. And the Trinity, that is such a fabulous life of love and joy and peace. And that his body yearned for that, his human soul. And so it overrode his body needs of sleep, of need for food and thirst for 40 days. But in the meantime, though, his body was still in need. And how hungry do you think it would have been after 40 days? So then, that's a new context of what you get in the scripture. That's not mentioned there, see? Does it say he was in an ecstasy of prayer? But Jesus is saying he was not that much aware of his body needs here. See, there was something special about that. So he continues, because I am made of flesh too, my dear friends, real flesh, and my flesh is subject to the weakness common to all the flesh. And with my flesh, I have a heart. Yes, I took the first and second of three parts that form man. I took the physical part with all its needs and the morals with its passions. And whilst with my will I subdued all the bad passions at birth, I felt the holy passions grow like mighty age-old cedars. That is, filial love, love for the fatherland, friendship, work, everything that is best and holy. And here I felt nostalgia for my faraway mother. Here I felt the need of her care for my human frailty. Here I felt once again the need of her care for once again the pain of parting from the only one who loved me with perfect love. Here I realized what sorrow is laid aside for me, and I was grieved at her sorrows, poor mother, who would have to shed so many tears for her son. And because of the wickedness of men, that she will be left tearless. And here I experience the weariness of the hero, of the ascetic, who in an hour of forewarning realize the uselessness of their efforts. I cried. Sadness, a lure for Satan. It is not a sin to be sad in painful circumstances. It is a sin to go beyond sadness and fall into inertness and despair. But Satan comes at once when he sees anyone in spiritual languor. That means, say, laziness. Notice that statement. That's worth a note. I would call that a maxim. He says, Satan comes at once when he sees anyone in spiritual languor. I am indexing, again, further statements, and especially what can be called maxims that fit all circumstances in our life. And this is one for our spiritual life. So beware of a kind of a laziness or just a kind of a lazy moseying along. Jesus saying that's fertile territory for old Nick. So he says he came dressed as a kind traveler. Now here, think of Jesus of Nazareth as you saw in the movie. Remember how he came? He was dressed like an Arab, and he was traveling. This is why I think Franco Zeffirelli, who was the director, he knew this work. See, because that came out in the 70s or the 60s. Mm-hmm. This was written back in the 50s, and it was in Italian. He's Italian. So he says here, he always takes a kind appearance. I was hungry and 30 years old. He offered to help me. First he said to me, tell these stones to become bread. But before, yes, even before, he spoke to me about woman. Oh, he knows how to speak of her. He knows her very well. He corrupted her first to make her his ally in corruption. I am not only the Son of God, I am Jesus, the workman of Nazareth. I said to that man, he's thinking about Judas now, saying, were you ever tempted? I said to that man who was speaking to me then, the one who asked me whether I had ever experienced temptations, and also accused me for being unjustly blessed, because I had not sinned. I said, the act subsides, namely the temptation, when satisfied. A rejected temptation does not fade away, but becomes stronger also because Satan instigates it. I resisted the temptation, both of lust of woman and hunger for bread. And you must know that Satan proposed woman to me as the best ally to succeed in the world. And he was quite right from a human point of view. Temptation did not give up because of my remark, man does not live on his senses only. And he spoke to me of my mission. He wanted to seduce the Messiah after failing with the young man. And he incited me to crush the unworthy ministers of the temple with a miracle. A miracle. The fire of heaven is not to be bent to form a wicker wreath to crown ourselves. And we must not put God to the test, asking for miracles for human purposes. That is what Satan wanted. The reason mentioned by him was an excuse. The truth was boast of being the Messiah, as he wanted to lead me to another lust, the lust for pride, fame, see, reputation, power. He was not daunted by my reply, you must not put the Lord your God to the test. And he circumvented me with the third power of his nature, gold. Oh, gold. Bread is a great thing, and woman even greater one for those longing for food or pleasure. To be acclaimed by the crowds is a very great thing for man. How many crimes are committed for these three things? But gold. Gold. It is a key that opens, a circle that joins. It is the beginning and end of 99 of human actions. Now there's a maxim for you, if you believe that Jesus said this. For bread and a woman, man becomes a thief. For power, he becomes also a murderer. But for gold, he becomes an idolater. The king of gold, Satan, offered me his gold if I adored him. I pierced him with the eternal words, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only. It happened here. Jesus is now standing. He seems taller than usual in the flat nature surrounding him. In the slightly phosphorescent light of the stars, also the disciples get up. Jesus goes on speaking, staring intently at Judas. Then he says, "The angels of the Lord came. The man had won the treble battle. The man knew what it meant to be a man and had won. He was exhausted. The struggle had been more exhausting than the long fast, but the spirit was triumphant. I think that heaven was startled at my becoming a perfect creature endowed with knowledge. I think that from that moment, I got the power of working miracles." Now there's something. Jesus is saying that he didn't possibly not have that perfect power performing miracles until then. So he says here, "I think from that moment, I got the power working miracles. I was God. I had become the man. Now, by defeating the animal nature connected with man's nature, I was the man God, and I am. And as God, I am omnipotent, and as man, I am omniscient. Do as I did if you want to do what I do, and do it in memory of me." And so he ends the dialogue there. So Jesus now describes, ends his revelation of his temptations with words of thanks to his disciples for sharing these experiences with him. After his return to the world from the mountain, on page 433, Jesus says, "I thank you for your company in the return to the place of my birth and the place of my penance. My first contacts with the world had sickened and depressed me. It is too ugly. My soul has now been nourished with the lion's marrow, the union with the Father in prayer and solitude. And I can go back to the world and take my cross upon me once again, the first cross of the Redeemer, the cross of the contact with a world in which there are too few souls called Mary, his mother, called John, his disciple." And now we move on to the next chapter. Jesus meets the shepherds, John, Matthias, and Simeon. After meeting the three shepherds, John, Matthias, and Simeon, he asks for news about John the Baptist. He learns that John is still in prison and that friends would like to collect a ransom to free him. The ransom asked by a private person who would perform the freedom, not in Herod's court. The ransom was 20 talents. Now, I don't know how many $1,000 that would be. And Judas is asked to sell the jewels given to Jesus by Aglae the prostitute. And he asks Simon also what he thinks of Judas. And I'm digesting a number of things and bypassing some. We're moving to page 437. The last two paragraphs. "But what do you see in Judas, Simon? I want you to tell me." And he says, "Well, when I look at him, I think of certain mysterious places which look like dens of wild beasts and malarial ponds. Only a huge tangle can be seen, and one is frightened and keeps clear. Instead, behind it, there are turtle doves and nightingales, and the soil is rich in healthy waters and beneficial herbs. I want to believe that Judas is like that. I think he must be, because you chose him, and you know. So in other words, it's not all evil in Judas. Behind him, there's much good. And Jesus says, yes, I know. There are many flaws in the heart of that man, but he has some good points. You saw that yourself in Bethlehem, where he defended Jesus from the crowd, and in Kerioth, where he tried to prepare a great big banquet for him and a parade. And his good points, which are humanly good, are to be raised to his spiritual goodness. Judas will then be as you would like him to be. He's young. Also, John is young, Simon says. And in your heart, you conclude that he is better. But John is John, meaning he's special, Jesus says. Love poor Judas, Simon, I beg you. If you love him, he will appear to be better. But he says, I endeavor to love him for your sake, but he breaks all my efforts. That's Peter too. As if they were water canes. But Master, there's only one law for me, to do what you want. I will therefore love Judas, although something within me shouts against him and towards myself. What, Simon? I do not know exactly what it is. Something that resembles the cry of the night watchman and says to me, do not sleep, watch. I do not know that something has no name, but it is here, in me, against him. Forget about it, Simon, Jesus says. Do not trouble to give it a definition. It is better to know, not to know certain truths, and you might be mistaken. Leave it to your master. Give me your love, and you can be sure that it makes me happy. Notice then how Jesus is preparing the apostles, first of all, how to deal with Judas, and to be considerate and tolerant, and he has to correct him sharply sometimes. But then also later on, we'll see where he has to be very strong and tough on Judas. And he was. In this next chapter now, we have an interesting scene and story. Judas tells how he sold the jewels to the pawn broker, Diomedes. But first, I think we need to pick up on just don't want to skip things that I'm not sure of. Yes. Judas returns. It's page 439 and the following. Judas returns with 11 talents from the sale of the jewels. He tells Jesus that he has secured 4 rooms at the local hotel so that they can live in decent setting for once. Jesus is not happy with this, but agrees to the arrangement. Notice how Judas takes things in his own hands. But he wanted to be a man of pleasure. He wanted a nice, comfortable place. But he's thinking, well, Jesus, you should have this. Never talks about himself. He's concealing the real motive. Now he tells the story of how he haggled with what we call the excise man over the jewels. John is very embarrassed because Judas told a lie, namely that John was planning to marry in the presence of the pawnbroker. And John had great difficulty going along with the lie and told Jesus about it. Here we see another side of Judas's character. How shrewd he was in business, how worldly wise, and a liar. When Judas finished telling the story, Simon Zealot asked Judas, what did Diomedes, the excise man, what did he say when Judas told you that you were a disciple of Jesus. And Judas says, you, the disciple of a holy man? I'll never believe it. Or I will soon see your holy man here asking for a woman. I am an old disgrace of the world, but you are a new disgrace. And I may well still change because I became what I am when I was old, but you will not change. You were born like that. And Simon said, and being a good Greek, Diomedes, he spoke the truth, meaning that he was right. When Jesus decides to give all the money as a ransom for John, Judas is not happy with that. He had plans, see, and he was surprised. Some of this is interesting to relate. Some of the haggling that took place and the way Judas brought him around to declaring the exact cost of the necklace that he was going to offer him. He concealed the fact that he had a gold necklace, but in all the display of his jewelry, he saw a similar necklace. So he wanted to know how much he would ask of him. So he wanted him to price it. And this is how he started out. I want to pick up where especially he talked about that particular necklace. He said, what a string of preparatory moaning on the times, taxes, risk, thieves, when he were haggling about prices. And another string of assurances on his honesty. And then his reply, just because it's you, I'll tell you the truth, without any exaggeration, all lies, but not even one penny less, I want 12 silver talents. Thief, Judas said. I said, Judas is relating this. And I went on, let's go, John. In Jerusalem, we'll find someone who is not such a thief as he is. And I pretended I was going out. He ran after me. My great friend, my beloved friend, come, listen to your poor servant. I cannot accept less. It's impossible. Look, I'll make an effort at the cost of ruining myself. I'll do it because you have always honored me with your friendship. And you made me do good business. 11 talents. There they are. And that is what I would pay if I had to buy that gold from someone starving. Not a penny less. It would be like bleeding my veins. Is that not what he said? He made me laugh and he disgusted me at the same time, Judas saying that. Mm-hmm. When I saw that he was quite determined on the price, I pulled a fast one on him. Dirty old rascal. Bear in mind, I do not want to buy. On the contrary, I want to sell. This is what I want to sell. Look, it is as beautiful as yours. Gold from Rome in the latest fashion. It will sell like hotcakes. You can have it for 11 talents. Exactly what you asked for yours. You fix the price and you pay. You should have heard him. This is treachery. You betrayed the esteem I held you in. You want to ruin me. I cannot pay all that, he shouted. You appraise its value, so pay. I cannot. Look, I'll take it to somebody else. No, my friend, don't. And he stretched out his hooked hands towards Aglaé's heap of gold. Well then, pay. I should ask for 12 talents. But I will be satisfied with the last price you ask. I cannot. Usurer. Look, I have a witness here, and I can report you as a thief. Look, I have a witness here, and I mentioned other virtues of his, which I will not repeat on account of this boy, John. So here's Judas at his best. At his best at what? Telling lies, haggling, you know. greedy. So he says at last he sold it. This is some of the things that went on, and some of that I was going to bypass, but I think it's interesting because it shows his character, and it shows how capable he is, and it kind of confirms the bit of humor that I shared with you on one of my jokes tapes, where they fed a computer in Jerusalem with all the character of the apostles. And the computer came out with Peter is untrustworthy. He's a very volatile person. You can't trust him. And John, he's too young, and he won't make much of a good impression. Ran down all the other apostles. When it came to Judas, and said, here's a man wise in his ways. Take him.